Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
Elman Abdelmahmoud.
Nailed it.
Yes. Editor, news curation with BuzzFeed News. Hello, welcome to Canada Land.
How's it going today?
It's going pretty well, especially you're here, your first time on the show. It's great to have you.
At last.
I'm Ashley Chinati. I'm filling in for Jesse Brown. He's on some beach somewhere in Jamaica. Lucky dude, as it's freezing here. All right, Elman, so today we have quite the week. Three related topics we're actually going to tackle. So the first is the horrific shooting in a mosque in Quebec City on Sunday night. The second is Trump's immigration ban on, that's apparently not about Muslims, but it's totally about Muslims. And a motion to study racism and Islamophobia in Canada that's currently before Parliament. Welcome to Canada Land Shortcuts.
Thank you kindly.
This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is brought to you by Stephen Robinson, Lisa McDonald, Clayton Rudy, Sheila Hansen, Ron Ellsworth, Craig D. Adams, Bill Dickey, and James Monroe. James, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because you're witty, self-aware, informative, and responsive to your audience. I chose to support Canada Land because I believe it serves an important role in informing Canadians on issues that matter.
This episode is also brought to you by Canada Land's founding sponsor, FreshBooks. FreshBooks makes super easy cloud accounting software for freelancers and small businesses. It's like having your own accountant, except you don't have to talk to anyone. You can use FreshBooks for everything from tracking your hours to logging expenses to getting a sense of what's coming in and out. Plus, you don't have to send embarrassing Microsoft Word invoices anymore. FreshBooks makes your invoices look professional, and they found that when you use them, you get paid faster. It saves you time, so you can spend more time on your actual business. And you can try it out for free. That's right, for free, for 30 days at freshbooks.com/CanadaLand. That's freshbooks.com/CanadaLand. Sign up right now at freshbooks.com/CanadaLand. And when you do, tell them we sent you.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We got a tour of their facilities in their downtown Toronto campus, and I was blown away by the heroic work that these people are doing. They are saving lives every day. I know people whose lives were saved, and they just really care about the dignity of the people who turn to them for help. Look, we talk a lot about these issues on Canada Land. We talk about the crisis that is claiming 20 lives every day in Canada to drug overdoses, but we don't give you a lot of options of what you can do about it. CAMH is an option. CAMH desperately needs resources that they directly put into their work, saving lives and turning people's lives around. Listen, May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. This is when they need your help the most. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter like seclusion and, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get like anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding like the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand.
So, Element, it's great to have you here. It's your first time on Canada Land. Shortcuts.
Absolutely, my very first time in these hallowed grounds.
So I'm glad I can already... make something, like fix something Jesse didn't do, because
yeah, that's
he
right.
should have had you sooner.
That's right. That's right. When he's away, we finally get to fix the wrongs.
There we go. Yeah. That's the point of today.
Good.
All right. So in much less fun-filled fare, the horrible tragedy on the weekend in Quebec started unrolling Sunday night, 6 people dead, 19 injured, a couple still in critical condition in hospital. It was a very fluid situation, and one of the things that was really interesting was how sort of slow the English media was to get on the story. When I first heard about it, I found going to the French language media, I was getting a bit more, and apparently one of the French language networks that I don't get, I don't have cable, I don't know about you, but I've cut the cord.
I don't have cable either.
Had some very quick coverage, but the slow ones, there was a lot of people lamenting the fact there wasn't any sort of instant news coverage of this. Do you think, before we sort of get into the politics of the reaction of the nature of the shooting, how did you react to the fact that it was sort of a slow trickle out because it was a Sunday night?
You know, to me, I've also cut the cord. In terms of breaking news, I tend to get my breaking news from Twitter. So for me, I was watching Twitter. So as soon as information started sort of coming out, that's where I turned to get the latest. It was not especially a big loss for me, but I understand, you know, trying to turn on the CBC and not finding that programming on there. Yeah, I think I would imagine that would be somewhat upsetting for some people.
And I think, you know, it is Sunday night, so your staffing is going to be a little bit lighter, but Quebec City is a pretty major, like it is a seat of government in this country. All the reporters did get mobilized sort of later in that evening, but I think that perhaps this shows a bit about what the declining staffing is doing to our media landscape. I mean, 24-hour news, the expectation of it is still a relatively modern phenomenon, but even now we don't seem almost as able to fulfill that on the TV side, but on Twitter and on print, it was definitely there. So,
did anybody go live? Did anybody like from the English networks at all go live?
They started to have phoners.
Okay.
Like, when I was watching CBC's The National, they changed it up a little bit and had a phoner. And same thing with Global that came on afterwards. So those I pick up over my antenna. I just don't have cable news anymore at home.
Right.
But overall, how do you think that we did with the coverage of this shooting? I mean, it was very fluid. There's a lot of misreporting right from the beginning. The fact that it was in a mosque made it a very heated and political story from the very out, on top of it just being the tragedy of 6 people losing their lives.
Yeah, I think there's something about this particular story that came, you know, it came the day after Canadians were reacting to the fact that dual citizens, at least for a period of time on Saturday, were banned from going to the United States. And I think that's something we'll talk about later. It was just such a tense climate, such a tense atmosphere coming in the aftermath of Trump's ban that, to me, I actually really appreciated how we handled that story in terms of being very careful with the news that came out. And I say we being like most major networks. I saw a lot of U.S. networks start to cover this and they got a little bit out of hand, got a little bit carried away. especially with the names of the suspects and the identity of one of the suspects, which is something that our Prime Minister's office, quickly addressed eventually.
So that's a really interesting point. I don't want to repeat his name because I think it's already been out there enough.
Yes.
But there was a man with a very distinctly Muslim name who was mm-hmm. one of the two initial arrestees. And we've now learned it's just he saw a gun and he ran because they'd been being shot at, one probably would.
That's right. He was a witness.
So they cleared that up quickly and he was released. But his name and the fact that there was connotations this might be Islamic terrorism quickly got picked up on by, say, the Daily Beast in the States. Fox News sort of didn't let it go.
Yes.
Until, like you said, the Prime Minister's office essentially picked a public fight with them and won.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the Rebel and sort of the alt-right media in the States now doing this, like, weird conspiracy theory.
They're just asking questions.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right.
They're asking questions.
They're just asking questions.
You know.
That's the thing that they do, right?
Like, right. They just ask questions.
That's right.
Hateful questions.
Yes. Irresponsible questions. That's really what it is, right? Is in a story like this, when you want to be as careful as possible with the facts because they're already inflamed enough, people have lost their lives, saying something like, I'm just asking questions, is the very definition of being irresponsible here. And I'm not going to name specific outlets, the Rebel, but I think...
Hi, Ezra.
I think there's a particular bit of a responsibility with the way that they handle that. And I don't think, even as argumentative as Ezra tends to be, I don't think there's even a world where he would argue that they handle that responsibly. It doesn't help that I'm a Muslim talking about this and accusing you, so I'm very sorry, but you handle this irresponsibly.
All right, so what about how the Prime Minister's office handled this feud with Fox News? I thought it was interesting that they went public. I always get a little bit tense about the idea of the Prime Minister's office laying the heavy on a media outlet.
Brave new world, fam. Like, this is where we are now, right? Like, if Trump does it, and Trump does it day in and day out, the failing New York Times, I think, what was it yesterday? I think earlier today or yesterday, he said something about one news outlet that needs to get its act together. Listen, if Fox News messed up on that, I think they should have been called out on it. I think this is a very different caliber than Trump just, sort of naming media outlets he doesn't like.
It's interesting to see sort of how it's playing out. And one thing I've been rather heartened by is that people are talking about the fact that there is a pattern of Islamophobia in Canada, but we aren't sort of having the like, oh no, racist Quebec conversation.
That's right.
Because I think the Quebec media itself is having a very good and nuanced, especially if you start looking at the French language press, mm-hmm. nuanced debate about this and how this young man became radicalized in some way. Something has to snap in your mind to want to go kill a bunch of people, right?
Of course.
So I feel like the word radicalization is fair there, though I'm sure some would come at us for that. So I actually wanted to play you a clip. So our former Governor General, Adrienne Clarkson, had something to say about what she thought was the cause of this. And I thought it was interesting.
Hit me.
We are now seeing a president who is a president by tweet. And president by tweet does that in 142 characters. And I wanted to put into context what's happening in Canada with the fact that we have a porous border and people watch things and they get the language of hatred, exclusion, of ignorance. And that is really what is frightening. And that's what makes possible something like that horrifying event in Quebec City.
You're making little, like, popping hand gestures.
Little finger guns. Yeah. Maybe that's not appropriate in this particular instance. But, like, where you, like, snaps. Just,
yeah.
I think there's a real sense of us taking on the language that people are speaking south of the border. And a good example of this has been Kelly Leach,
campaign manager.
That's right. Exactly. And it's, I think we have to understand that when we watch those things and they become mirrored here, mm-hmm. We are responsible for that. And we are responsible for having this conversation as openly as possible. And I just, good job, Adrienne Clarkson.
I think it's a great quote. I think I really like what you were saying about, the trickle of the language coming here. So Nick Kouvalis, who is Kelly Leach's campaign manager, used the word cuck in a tweet to an academic. He's now apologized for it. Good on Mr. Kouvalis for that, I guess. But the fact that
very generous with you.
Yeah.
Good on him. Sure.
But I think we all sometimes say things on Twitter we shouldn't. So
I have never called someone a cuck and then they're like, ah, You know, maybe that was a little over the line.
It is a very, like, loaded and very racist word to come to your mind.
It's just, I don't know why you cuck would be the first thing that would come to your mind.
Unless you're very actively trying to court the sense that there's an alt-right growing in Canada. And if you want to foster that and still be engaged in mainstream politics with politicians like Mayor John Tory in Toronto, that raises a lot of questions for his other clients, though, doesn't it?
Sure does.
Yeah.
Sure does.
So I think I agree a lot with what Adrian Clarkson was saying, but I think the one thing that tweaked me about it a little bit is it felt like something that we've been having a lot this week, which is a lifting of culpability off of Canadian shoulders and saying this is the Trump effect coming here, when in reality, I think the history of Islamophobia in this country, in particular in Quebec, started with that discussion of the Values Charter and niqab bans and the provincial election in that province and then the federal election. And there were, you know, hate crimes inspired by some of the rhetoric coming out of both of those campaigns. And so I love the spirit of what she's saying. I just don't think we can put this on Trump.
Well, I don't think she was, to me, that didn't sound like she was trying to put it on Trump, but there's something that we've inherited. Here's what I was trying to say earlier that I don't think came out very clearly, is that we've inherited this sort of learned from Trump and from Trump-style politics, this weird openness about being hostile and hateful of certain people. That is something that has been, you know, the going MO in the States. And they sort of starting to creep in here. I miss the days of subtle racism. Like, I miss the days of, like, having to sit around and, like, parse language and be like, you know, they're trying to say this, but this is how that's coded for this. But now it's just right there. Like, now it's just someone being hateful and they just say it straightforwardly in your face or on Twitter. And they, you know, these implications just, like, fly around. And you don't have to dig very deep for the hate. And I guess I miss the days of, like, polite Canadian racism where you have to, like, bury it a little and then someone has to, like, parse it out a little for you.
Those were
better days.
They were better days.
Yeah.
I think that actually leads well into one of our other topics, which was the idea of M103. It's a motion from Erka Khalid. She's an MP for Mississauga. And basically the premise of it is that she's calling on Parliament to condemn and study the presence of Islamophobia and racism in general in Canada.
Yes.
But in particular, she's also calling for tracking of hate crimes. So the full motion, we'll post a link with the podcast so you can look at it. But the basic crux of it is that, in the opinion of the House, the government should A, recognize the need to quell the increasing public climate of hate and fear, B, condemn Islamophobia and all forms of systemic racism and religious discrimination, C, request the Standing Committee on Canadian Heritage to undertake a study on how the government could, one, develop a whole-of-government approach to reducing or eliminating systemic racism and religious discrimination, including Islamophobia in Canada, while ensuring a community-centered focus with a holistic response through evidence-based policymaking. Two, collect data to contextualize hate crime reports and to conduct needs assessments for impacted communities, and that the committee should present its findings and recommendations to the House no longer than 248 calendar days, blah, 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 more jargon.
Mm-hmm.
So the basic gist of that is Islamophobia and racism are bad. We need to study it more in this country. A committee should look at how we can do a better job of studying it.
How dare an MP suggest that in a House of Commons?
Right?
What? I am offended.
Yeah.
This is part of creeping Sharia in this country.
Yeah. You have to read. So jihadwatch.org.
Yes. Favorite
has
website.
A great, great take on this,
yes,
motion.
They
and,
do.
You know, it's about how the Parliament of Canada is going to adopt Sharia law. That's what this motion means.
Yeah, there's something amazing to me about there's this certain movement that should not be named that exists in this country and south of the border. They say, like, well, why don't we just look at racism and how it's real? And they go, this is some thought police shit. You know, like, that's like their first response, is that they just want to be like, you're trying to control our thoughts. You're trying to police the way that we say these things. And it puzzles me a lot.
Well, like, how deeply ingrained does your racism have to be to your identity to feel like you're being thought policed for someone to say, like, racism is bad and we should maybe study it?
That's right. That's right. Like, nothing in that motion suggests that anyone at all will be attacked for anything that they say.
No, it's the idea of systemic racism. It's those code words that have become triggers for the right where they don't like it. They're like, oh, well, no.
They don't have triggers. Come on. They don't. They're totally trigger-free.
My little stone heart is trembling.
Yeah. How dare anyone study the idea of systemic racism, whether it exists, how it impacts society at all, not as opposed to saying that, like, you know, this is something that we should solve immediately and these are all the ways to solve it. We should teach all the children about systemic racism. I mean, that would be nice, but I'm advocating that. But in this house, all they want to do is just study it and its impact. I don't see how that's a problem.
I asked you to duly note something every week.
Yes.
So I'm curious, what's burning? What's got your gears this week? What do you...
You know, I mean, listen, I've been on Twitter for many days looking at nice pundits whom I admire, who want to take Kathleen Wynne to task for shooting down road tolls in Toronto. And I know this is a very Toronto-centric story, but like to me... I don't see how she had any other option. We have a city council that refuses to raise property taxes by anything higher than inflation. And we're all just sitting around pretending like that's normal for some reason. But we really want to pass the cost down to the 905. And, you know, maybe it's because I'm like a little bit sensitive to this, maybe because I'm from Kingston, Ontario. But, you know, I don't see how those people should pay for your roads, Toronto. Get your act together.
So I'm from Kitchener, and I think that the people who use the roads should pay for them. And
fight,
I think
fight
that, me. I think that it's as many, you know, people in the 905 as people in Kitchener, people in Kingston. When you come in for like a hockey game and you're buying like $200 hockey tickets, paying $2 to take the Gardner isn't going to make or break your trip. And I think the reason I like road pricing in general and the reason I'm so disappointed in the premier is that she's someone who said we wanted to have an adult conversation about transit. She's someone who helped draft the regulations that gave the city of Toronto the ability to ask the province for road tolls.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the one who said, who's trying to have an adult conversation with these HOT lanes, and then said in December, you know what, it's a city council decision. I'm going to respect the city of Toronto. And now she, for another liberal seat-saving move, it's something they're really great at, this provincial party, they've 180'd on something that she herself has tried to champion as good evidence-based public policy. None of that is to say that our property taxes aren't too low in this city.
But that's just it, right?
And I don't think it's an either-or. Maybe it's a both.
It's definitely a both.
Yeah.
But
so
there's no universe.
So toll the DVP and the Gardner and raise the property taxes. If the premier came out and said, toll the DVP and the Gardner, but you have to raise your property taxes up to the, like, the average of the GTA before we'll allow you to do so, I would have been like clapping
but
in the streets.
This city council has shown like a persistent inability to play ball in terms of raising property taxes. Because guess what? They too are worried about re-election, and that's the one thing that they're not ever going to touch. And so,
because the property values have gotten so high, though, what about those grandparents who live in like Ossington and have this house that has skyrocketed afford a hike?
I'm not saying Premier Wynne is a hero for doing this. I'm not at all saying that. I'm just saying, like, listen, if you're going to call someone for being a coward, call everybody a coward.
Okay.
You know? And I guess that's what you want to do.
Pretty much.
All right.
All right. So no one wants to do evidence-based policy. I'm about like this close from trying to like campaign for a technocracy at this point. So,
well,
or technocracy, which is it?
I think it's the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, listen, no. Yeah. As long as politicians are worried about their jobs forever, they're going to do the thing that pleases the largest number of people, and it's very disappointing.
All right, so I'm actually going to do my duly noted on something that I'm proud of the premier for, because
cool.
I actually do have a lot of respect for Premier Kathleen Wynne. So this week she went to a mosque to comfort the Ontario community that was grieving with its, you know, its religious community in Quebec. And immediately there were these right-wing pundits, most of whom are not about to come, you know, to the women's march against Trump.
Name names.
Some of them work for the same company as me, so I'm just going to throw it out there. There were a lot of critics of Premier Wynne who were not pleased with her decision to go to a mosque because she, gasp, had to put on a headscarf and sat at the back before she addressed the with the women, before she addressed the congregation. And for some reason, this is the most offensive thing ever. And it just drives me nuts, because it's not like these are people who are showing up for the ladies the rest of the time. They suddenly find their feminist credentials when they want to criticize like Islam or some other kind of other. It's the same way people try to use when they talk about Canadian values. They're like, well, respecting women is one of our Canadian values, so how could we possibly let in people from countries where like they don't have women's rights or something? Like,
That's when you hand true stuff. It's like, I have several questions about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. And it's like, first, maybe they want the women's rights, so that's why they're coming here. Second of all, where were you when, you know, the fight was about abortion access in PEI, or the fact that Planned Parenthood Ottawa had to put out an emergency fundraising appeal last year? We think this stuff doesn't happen in this country, but it does. Mm-hmm. But they're only here for the ladies when it furthers some other agenda of theirs.
I like your duly noted.
So we have one more clip, and this is about the immigration ban.
All right.
And so I know that you were on, you had a great panel on CBC's The National on mm-hmm. Sunday, where you talked a bit about this. So I'll ask you to sort of react to this. It's Andrew Leslie. He's the parliamentary assistant to Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland, but he's very specifically tasked with Canada-US relations. And so Trudeau was getting a lot of great press internationally for his tweet saying, like, Canada is open. But the government has also been very careful with how they've been handling their criticisms of the Trump administration. And this is a great example. Here's Mr. Leslie talking on the CBC.
The Americans, as we know so well, are our closest friend and biggest ally. The temptation may be there to criticize them publicly, but that's not what friends do. If you've got differences, you resolve them quietly. You resolve them person to person based on long-standing relationships. And I think we're on track to do that.
Fine. No, I'm mad. I
was there's, like waiting.
There's like a world where I hate this so much. Okay. So I don't know where to begin. I think there is a line where you criticize your friends in private. And there is a line where if you have a dear friend who did something really bad and really racist out in the open, very publicly, you go, actually, my friendship with you is impacted by this. And I would like you to know that. And I'd like everybody else who I'm friends with. This friendship analogy is terrible. To also know that as well. That's why there's a very good reason why the chief of the European Union called Donald Trump a worrying threat in a time where Canada's government was being a little bit careful. Now, listen, I'm all for pragmatism. I get it. I think the Canadian government has to be very careful about it. But let's not throw a moralistic argument around it. Let's just be like, oh man, like we really can't criticize them too publicly because it would have very serious consequences for us. I guess I'd rather if someone has to take, you know, I've done it lots of times when people close to me have done something terrible where I, and they have, where I was like, I think I'm being a bit of a coward on this and I'm just going to have to accept that. I face that reality. I think that answer doesn't sound like it's facing reality.
You just called General Andrew Leslie a coward.
I did not. I called the Canadian foreign policy in relationship to handling, especially dual citizens, you know, shy. Why don't we say that?
No, I agree with you. I think you can be stronger in disagreeing with them. I think we've had times in our history where we were. Trudeau Sr. did not win any friends in Washington when he opened the door to China or when he made friends with Fidel Castro.
That's right.
So, and were those the right things to do? People still debate that. I mean, Castro was a pretty brutal dictator. There's a lot of human rights issues in China. But the liberalization of trade around the world has been generally good for people.
That's a contentious statement. I don't do it for trade, but anyway.
Okay.
But no, I just mean like, you know, there are lots of defenses of, you know, being like a good democratic neighbor without necessarily the liberal trade bit. But that's okay. That's a whole other
we're gonna go into the like globalization and
yes,
you know, people can access goods more widely and more cheaply than ever before.
That's true. On the back of the working poor, but it doesn't matter.
All right. So the other thing I wanted to talk to you a bit about, though, is because you did stress the dual citizens and how this has impacted you as someone who is a dual citizen.
Yeah, man. So like on Saturday, you know, from I think there was a Reuters report that first came out that said like dual citizens of these seven nations that are banned from the U.S. will not be allowed to enter. And so for like a good 8 hours, I was like, huh. It appears as though I am banned from entering the United States. Now, look, like, I work for a company that's based in the States. Last year, I went to the States 6 times. Two or three of those were for work. So it was a bit shocking. It was a bit shocking to, like, because it makes it an additional level of real, you know? You go from, like, knowing people who are impacted by this, because I have tons of family in Sudan, to all of a sudden it's like, it's you. And I've been living in Canada for 17 years. I've been a citizen for 14. So it was quite a surprise.
So now you ostensibly you can go to the States.
Yeah, not a risk I'm willing to take, but absolutely.
So how will you, like you said, you know, BuzzFeed's head office is in New York. Will you go for work?
I think work has been amazing about this. Yeah. Like they, you know, I had like four different people reach out to me the same day that it was announced. I don't think they're going to expect me to go to the States in the next little while. I think they're going to, you know, I don't think anybody's going to ask.
Right.
But that said, like, I also go to the States quite often recreationally, and I think that's something that I'm going to have to, like, put a little to the side for the next few months until at least there's some clarity around this, because right now there is no clarity at all.
And that's one of those things that I'm having a hard time wrapping my own head around. I have a bachelorette I'm planning in the States, and where we're going is actually a surprise for the bride, but she and I were talking about it last night. I was like, look, I want to tell you that this is going to be in the States. Let me know if you want to cancel it. And she's like, let's like let stuff shake out a little bit over the next few months, because we aren't planning to go until Labor Day. But like we sort of have this impulse of like, I don't really want to go to the States if they're going to make it difficult for other people to go to the States. You know what I mean?
I've heard that sentiment quite a bit, you know, like just in the last couple of days, a lot of people are like, I don't need to go to, you know, I don't need to go to Vegas. I don't need to go to Florida. I don't need to go to these places.
You can fly just as cheaply to Mexico or to like London or something.
Yeah, go elsewhere
and
enjoy yourself.
It's our 150th anniversary.
That's right.
Find a cute Airbnb in some part of the country you've never seen and learn something about your own country.
Go to Abbotsford, BC. It's the Miami of Canada.
I've always wanted to see the Sable Island ponies. Maybe that'll be something I'll do.
Why not?
Instead of going to America.
That would make a great bachelorette.
I'm sure I'm going to get a call when this goes on the air of like, we're not going to the Sable Island ponies,
That's
Ashley.
Not where we're going.
But then, you know, there's also the argument of, do you hurt the local economies of cities that voted for Hillary Clinton and are very liberal places that are going to see their funding cut by this administration?
I mean, sure, but maybe those people will be out in the streets protesting too.
Yeah.
I'm all for, you know, putting pressure on people to act. And I think one thing that's been really interesting in the follow-up to this ban is like how radicalized, how politicized people are. People are angry. People are out in the streets. It's been fascinating. I love it.
The coffee shop downstairs has like a, yes, we're angry, but coffee helps sign. Yeah. Like it's just everywhere. There's this like rage and sadness. Everyone's sort of oscillating between it. And it helps to have these kinds of conversations. Oh, and it's been great. I'm so glad to have brought you on Canadaland.
Thanks so much for having me. My pleasure.
So that's your Canadaland Shortcuts. I hope you enjoyed it, with or without Jesse. You can reach me at Ashley Chinnady on Twitter. That's Ashley with an L-E-Y, C-S-A-N-A-D-Y. The same thing at Gmail also works. And you can find Elamin on Twitter at Elamin88. That's E-L-A-M-I-N-88. Our website is canadalandshow.com. Our crowdfunding site is patreon.com/canadaland. This show is produced by Russell Gregg. His first, welcome Russell. If you live in Hamilton, you can catch a live taping of The Imposter tomorrow, Friday, February 3rd at 9:30 p.m. They're calling it Hamilton, comma, the musical, not to be confused with Hamilton, colon, the musical. It's got live music from the band Xena, a fake TED Talk, some local GIF history, and the story of Hollywood's first movie star, who happens to be from Hamilton. Tickets are $15, and you can get them at the Mills Hardware Store website. Go to millshardware.ca and click on Get Tickets. I'll be back Monday while Jesse continues to laze on the beach. And if you like what we do, please support us. Again, that's at patreon.com/CanadaLand. Thanks for joining us. I'm Ashley Chinnady. Until next time.